This is channel one over. This is channel one over on Jimmy Means's tape. It is now also Mr. George Lawrence Silcox's tape. He is Frank's father-in-law. Frank is one of my friends and helpers at the gas well. Just happened to be talking to him one day and brought up that, in no connection at all. I said, now, a skidder. See, I hear these old sawmill men talking about skidders, and I have no idea what one looks like. He told me, and he told me where I could find anything else about sawmilling that I needed to find out, and that was from his wife's father, and he lived down on 4th Avenue. We're in Southwest Gainesville, and just crossed Main Street and four blocks over, and that's where he was. And overalls, with his black felt hat on and wearing a chain, watch with a chain on it. And he'd be sitting out on the porch. Well, it was the next thing to it. He came to the door, and he came right out, and we sat down on the porch on this Christmas, December day. On 4th Avenue, that's a through street now. It's been widened. And the cars made so much noise, I could hardly hear him talk. And, of course, the tape wouldn't have been any good at all. So I said, Mr. Silcox, could we go inside? I'm hard of hearing. He didn't mind. Well, that little paper house of his, almost as bad in there as it was there. So Ms. Silcox was waiting to for someone to pick her up and go to a little Christmas party. And when she left, I said to him, I've got to run an errand and we can talk if you just get in the car and go with me. Of course, he is ready to go. I turned off 4th Avenue and went over towards the new post office and stopped along there where it was quiet. And we sat there and talked for an hour. Now, he's up in 80, 84 as I remember. He lived in Gainesville since 1932. He did some sawmill work for the university after that, but most of his was earlier. And he was brought up doing that kind of work with his father. And he came with his father, and there were four of the boys from over Glencoe Springs, it comes out, I forget the name, over to Melrose in 1898. He was a boy then. One of the things he grew up doing was cording wood for the railroad, and I never heard of that. I heard of cording wood in the old steamboat days. Now, this is the first thing he said that was clear on the tape.
Well, I had plenty of jobs, but they
were
little pay.
Yeah.
That was the trouble.
Yeah.
Pay was too small.
Yeah,
and later, he said if he had to do over again, he believed he would go back then when conditions were like they were then. Only the men that did the work got so little of the money. In other words, the men like Mr. the banker, you know, got too much of it. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe he inside it too.
Yeah.
Sense.
So, by the time you moved here, you'd already done your sawmilling, hadn't you?
Yeah. Of course, I done some here after I moved here. Sawmill some for the university out there in that forest.
Oh?
Back over on the east side of that big forest out there.
Uh-huh.
So, the man, Fields, I believe, was his name. I think he manufactured these little portable mills, you know.
Oh.
You set it down, put up your little bed and carriage and everything, and you pull it with a tractor, a caterpillar, or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You pull it with a little caterpillar out on it.
Yeah.
Take the caterpillar loose and go and make us some logs up there. Put them in the farmer.
Yeah.
Back out in the forest and get another one, come in with them and get a bunch of them up there, 5 or 10, 20, something like that, sort them up.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay, no. on the place that caterpillar in line with your belt, you see, and you had it.
Yeah.
That caterpillar stay there and pull it.
Gave that all the power you needed.
Gave up the power.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't want
it. I used that in there a year or two out there for them, and then they couldn't do a number for some kind of stop pin or fencing or something they were going to use right at the university out there. They were going to curse over it, you see.
Uh-huh.
It was riding down and on. I hadn't been back up the old forest for a long time.
Yeah,
but there were some of those posts that they were clear soldered posts. I had them for down around 1,519 acres out there.
Oh.
We put up a fence around it.
It'd be nice to see you take a look at it, wouldn't it?
Oh, it's grown up so you wouldn't know it.
Oh, you know it has.
It has, because it wouldn't let it burn. It stopped burning about shortly after we got the fence up.
Oh, yeah.
The first time they did that, you know, to have it give it a start and to get the fence road and everything cleaned out good.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. And after that, then they
work anymore than that. Let's see, I don't remember what I did when that job was out up there. See, got me out with the university, and they got it on a state project, you see, up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I got along the work by working all around that way.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to do most any kind of work, I could get a job most anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
I had to pick up too much.
Yeah, at night.
I could go over others and be laid off.
No, sir, I didn't
like the rig that you put out. I don't know what it is. I don't remember where it located. Up there in the Madison State right in there, I think. Seemed like it was in Louisville, Kentucky. And manufactured them little, you know, and he put them out of the van and let people try them out. He take it and bring it down here and put it up.
Oh,
well. Well, it helped us get it set up right.
Yeah.
And then he just left it there for so long that the university used it so long and they bought it.
Uh-huh.
So it's a memory.
Yeah.
You know,
now there was a bunch of us out there, and this man that brought the mirror down, he recommended me to the men out there at the university for the job of operating the mill.
Oh, he did?
He did.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I'd ever met him, is when he brought the mill down.
Yeah. But he could see that you knew how to take a hole. Yeah.
That little rig going, it was about the best that ever I saw. He put out a plain two saw, you see. He didn't have his inserted key.
Uh-huh.
To go in there. Two plain two saw. He used the switch to set it, you see, or the swell tooth on the edge to make it have opening enough to cut a hole open enough for the saw knot.
Uh-huh.
And you could cut the lumber with it. And if you wanted to, you could shift it in less than 5 minutes before you could turn right around and go to cutting shingles with it right there on your log carriage.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Now that seems like a mystery in a way.
Yeah.
That you can cut a bevel edge shingle that way, ended shingle. You cut one bevel one way, the sharp end, let's say, is from you this one time, and the next time, it'll come out here next to it.
Yeah.
And catch your block pretty well level.
Yeah.
A half inch thick on the back end.
Yeah. When I see that again, I must,
Well, it's so just, like, I just like this here.
Can't quite picture that.
Block, you know.
Yeah.
It would be the 18 inch long parts you're doing to cut shingles in the old times, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the first shingle, you'd set it about a half inch here. Well, you pull the lever on here to throw that thing just to where it's going out. That thing right out sharp ended, thin ended, you know, thick end and the thin end. But the next time, the thin end would be here and the thick end would be back here.
Yeah.
So that kept your block straight all the time. When you come down to the back, why, you had this angle there.
And you didn't have to reset it or anything?
No, all you do is put your block on and hook it so it could stay on there. When I saw his, you know, if it wasn't hooked down there or tamponed or something, it would fly no telling where.
Oh.
But when you hooked it down with a couple of hooks, that would leave it. When you put it on there, well, you could put on a stack of them called a 40-inch saw, you see, 20 inches high from the mandrel up.
Oh.
And you could cut through a stack. Some of them boys, you know, out at the university, they never did a day's work, but it warmed the work out there.
Yeah.
So they were not cutting some chambers for something. I don't know what the university needed them for, but they wanted, I think it was 10,000.
Uh-huh.
And I went cutting them shingles. That boy, they wanted, like I had a rattle about who was going to catch them shingles. You know, they thought it'd be just one shingle at a time.
Yeah.
You'd be five or six of them. You could just actually work a fella down.
Yeah.
Just according to the way you pull that lever, you see, and how quick you could get him a pile of shingles.
Oh, what do you know?
It was the best trick I ever saw, and that was Neil Lyon. I never did see another one that do it.
I never heard of anything like that.
I'll tell you what, there is one of them that they haven't got rid of it, up here at Horn Lumber Company. One later after we had that one out there.
And they still got it, you think?
They had it last time I was up there and noticed for it. Right close to the street on that side. They had the street going through.
Yeah. Well, what do you know? I never heard
in years.
Yeah. And that costly. It takes time, don't
sure
it?
Sure it do. It takes time. Well, now, if you're out in the timber, right where you want to cut timber about, see, they just kind of spotted their timber, cut out the decaying timber, something like that, for what was all over the university there.
Oh.
They would have to save in all the timber they could, but the timber dying or something was done dead, they cut it out and use it in lumber or something that way and let the other grow.
Uh-huh.
They had a special order, a special length stuff that they couldn't get out of the other kind.
Yeah.
What they did have, the cull stuff, I called it, you know, just cleaning it out.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, they had it out there too. It was some timber on that thing. And some big ones.
Yeah.
That little old mill, they'd take it right on. And saw.
That's pretty good saw, 40 inches, isn't it?
I mean,
yeah.
A 40-inch saw is pretty wide, you know, across. That gives you 20 inches from your mandrel up.
Yeah.
And half of it, so.
Yeah.
We used to use auctions mostly.
Yeah.
For what work I was in the woods that way.
Uh-huh.
But Pfeiffer, called my dad, charged him $21 a day, and me and him out here and my brother, and three open auctions. You see, we had three open auctions.
Yeah.
And he charged $5 $21 a day for all three of us and the team.
Uh-huh.
He jumps off, and he thought he'd just play Sunday, you know, and bought a skidder, put it out there, that river stitch you're speaking of, that's the idea.
Yeah.
And put, I think it was eight. Well, there was 10 or 11 men there to cut the logs and get them out. And we could get out more timber, the three of us, with that ox team, and all them men would with that skidding and everything.
Is that right?
Sure.
Well, how'd you manage it, Mr. Sure.
Go right on in the swamp with them and get them.
And know how to do it.
Knowing how is the main thing.
Yeah. And you all had worked together a lot.
Oh, yeah. For years, you know, just what to do and everything.
Yeah. And you used oxen.
Mm-hmm.
Six teams, six oxen, 12 oxen?
No, six oxen, three yoke. Six? Two to the yoke, you see.
Uh-huh.
And we had six head.
Uh-huh.
But now you can crowd them cows right in Danny Call the place, and they go in, and you turn them around so close to place. Yeah. You didn't have to bother with dragging that big cone back in there, or your cable back in the swamp. Well, that they had to do with another cable or a hand one.
Oh.
That's a job when you start pulling by hand.
Yeah.
We used that, well, we had to use a cone while we used two cables and a block, you know, put a block back on the swamp.
Yeah.
And then let that cable come through it.
Yeah.
Out to the hill where the logs were, so the cone. Well, then the hitch cut loose and the cable that pulled the log out and hooked to this cable the cone was hooked to, and they put it back in the swamp.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the oxens were.
Oh, the oxens would pull it out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pull the cable the log out and pull the cable back in the swamp.
Uh-huh.
Well, them oxens would go with that cable a whole lot faster than you can walk with it and pull it.
Oh, they would?
Why, sure.
You mean they'd step right along?
They went. You had to walk to keep up with them.
I didn't realize that. See, I never done any of that.
Yes, sir. Well, it's a whole lot of the way you break them, train them, you see, in the starting.
Yeah.
If you start them off, just let them poke along, they'll continue to. But then you want to keep agging them on, keep them
going.
You can keep learning pretty quick. They're quick things to learn.
Are they?
Yes, sir.
Well, they've been handled, and they're not scared, they're not wild or anything.
Sometimes you're wild when you first get them.
Yeah.
You start to break them.
Oh, are they? Yeah.
It's just according to the way you've handled your cattle, you see. If your cattle's out there in the open range, you're just going, nobody looking at them much, why, they're pretty skittish things.
They don't break too easy then.
Yeah, they pretty easy broke, but it just take you 2 or 3 weeks to get them gentle up to what you have them and get around them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what do you do? Keep them penned up and feed them?
Well, for a while, they would get them gentle up, you know.
Yeah.
Then we'd try to move, let them eat out the grass and stuff.
Yeah.
We always kept on fat all the time. I'd work them like nobody did.
Yeah.
I mean, we worked them. We didn't play them.
Yeah.
And they stayed fat all the time. But every chance we'd get, if we had an hour or two, we'd turn them loose, let them eat some grass and palmetto. You know, in the wintertime this way, cattle like palmettos.
Oh, yeah.
They eat them palmetto fans up.
Oh, yeah. That's green.
It's green. And they eat it. Well, you feed them just that dry feed all the time, but it kind of burns them, seems like.
Yeah.
They really relish something green.
Yeah.
If they can't get one thing, they'll eat another. They eat moss, or they eat that green palmetto, or they eat the grass.
Yeah.
We'll eat the water.
Yeah. Yeah. Little, if a fella had plenty of hay, something like that, it'd be nice.
Yeah,
with your
they don't care too much for the hay when you're feeding them that dry feed, you see.
Yeah.
They like something green.
Yeah.
Just like people.
Oh, they like
some. You get tired of kind of a fried food all the time, you want something boiled. You get tired of beans, you want some kind of vegetable, greens or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's the way we stop. And it seemed like that agreed with the cat, them too. They all stayed fat. Other people around, they couldn't keep them fat and feed them more feed than we did.
They'd like some of this winter rye, wouldn't they?
Sure.
Well, this is round 200 on channel 1 over, and we leave the living room of Mr. Silcox's little paper house right there on channel 4th Avenue. I just cut off that and took a dirt road, and just 100 yards, it was quiet, and cars were parked there. And we just sat there the longest time. I didn't realize until I was copying the tape how much I'm pushing in Mr. Silcox there in the living room. He started out to say things, and I hindered him. He said his oxen stayed fatter than anybody else's, and I didn't let him go ahead on that. Well, I hadn't taped in so long, and just got rusty. The flu and all these other things. Been working on these tapes up here. That's one trouble. That'll ruin your health and just wear all your organs out.
Uh-huh.
believe it was Adkins had it last. No, Adkins had it first. And then he sold to another fella, I forgot his name. Well, now, then that fella, here a year or two ago, he turned in and sold it to American Box Company.
Uh-huh.
So I think they're still making crates of material down there.
Uh-huh.
Just across the road, this side, the railroad from Paul Dukes's.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The mill gives out that they got stopped for 2 weeks or something like that to get repaired. Sometimes it used to take them 2 weeks to get parts and stuff that they'd have to get for the mill to get it.
Yeah.
And get it put in, you see.
Yeah.
At that Micanopy Junction or out there in the River Styx is
yeah.
where it was, the junction lay right west of the main
yeah.
River Styx.
Yeah.
You see, it's a long sand
right.
pin there.
Yeah.
And if you notice, if you go down the side of the Coastline Railroad there, if it's yet where it used to be,
yeah.
You come down on the east side of the railroad track here,
yeah.
you'll cross a stream of water here.
Yeah.
Well, over on this side of the railroad, there's a lake out there.
Yeah.
And this water goes into that lake from Orange Lake and comes right down through there.
Yeah.
That's a big swamp pin there. I don't know how far it is through.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a good long ways for halfway.
Yeah.
Pfeiffer, he just come to us and told us he'd been where we'd find the log cutting there. He wanted us to get it out, you see, before he put the skidder in there.
Yeah.
Well, he had one big log, and I don't know where I could find the place or not, but I believe we could by going up this from this side up the railroad track in there. He had a big log in there. Well, we had a 9-foot cart, I think it was then, 9-foot high log
yeah.
cart.
Yeah.
I reckon you saw them. And so we couldn't pick it up under that log cart.
Yeah.
It was so big, you know.
Yeah.
And Pfeiffer was really anxious for that big log.
Yeah.
He told me one day, he says, now if you put that log, it didn't have to carry it much further than that pecan tree yonder from where it was laying here in the edge of the swamp
yeah.
to get it out on the open hill up there.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't much further than that. A little further than that tall building over there. This building here, Alchon, from where I left the log on up to where you could have loaded it on a flat car.
Yeah.
So, with them 6 oxen now, and he had tried 7 mules to it. Big mules, too. And they were all fat and healthy looking. But they couldn't carry that log out of that swamp.
Yeah.
When it was to turn this way and up a hill kind of, and they just couldn't pull it.
Yeah.
And couldn't get them pulled together. I know what it was.
Uh-huh.
They didn't know why it was that them mules couldn't pull it, but
uh-huh.
I do. It's uh-huh. because they didn't work together.
Yeah.
That same way with ox teams. Now, I know the ox teams all around us. Yeah, we could take that little team we had. There wasn't no big steers that we had. We all had just medium size.
Yeah.
But he says, well, if you get that log now out here, up here for me, he showed me about where to put it. He says, I won't charge you nothing for the cutting of the log. He says, you can use my cable. It's already hooked to it. And the cone is already there. And he says, if you put it on the hill, he says, I won't charge you for any of it. And pay you so much a thousand. They will pay you by the 1,000 feet, you see, whatever the log scaled out. And so I said, well, I think I can put it up there. He says, all right. And so when he got that there, he didn't have but about 8-foot carts, you see, wheeled 8 feet high. I'd put it 4-foot pickup to your bed, and then the arch and the axle, or either the roller bed on that cart, and pick it up still higher a little. And so I went down there and hitched to it. And it wasn't a bit of trouble to me. I put it right on the hill with that cone.
Is that right?
And took the cone and cable loose and left it where he said out there. And so the log lay there. Well, last time I was in that section around there, that log was laying right there yet. He could never move it from there. I told him, I said, Mr. Pfeiffer, I says, if you want to pay me for it, Yeah, I said, I'll put it up on the side of that track right where you can roll it onto your flat car. You won't have to haul it at all onto the cart. And so he wouldn't never agree to that. And I didn't care, you know, after I got my pay for pulling it out the swamp up there, out the edge of the swamp, waiting for that car in the swamp.
And he just let it lay there?
He just let it lay there. But what else could he do?
He couldn't handle it.
He couldn't handle it, and he didn't know how. There's a whole lot more know-how to things that way. I work for a German on a pecan grove over here in 24, 25, 26, and 27. I left him in 28. And moved Hawthorne again.
Was that over past,
If you didn't know it, you wouldn't know it. Yeah. Man bought it and just let it go down.
Yeah.
He had around 300 acres of grove there.
Yeah.
The first year I was there, on the place, he wrote me back a letter. He was up in Danville, Illinois, and he written me a letter back. He says, you made me more clear money in the few months you've been on my place than the other man had made me in 3 years. I said, well, I don't know, but I'm glad if I did. I'm always back from my work to prosper something if I can.
Yeah.
And so he said, well, it sure has. And so that year, I think it was, that was in the early spring or winter when I moved there and went to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And up in the summer, he written me this letter back. Well, that season ended about October, you see. The nuts had begun to pepper down real good, and he'd always come down and stay from 2 to 3 weeks while we were gathering, just to see about how the crop was running. Then I had to oversee the hands gathering them out there in the field, and gather a lot of them myself, because you can't get a nigger to climb a tall tree like that one yonder. You couldn't get a nigger to get them out the top yonder to save your life.
I didn't know that.
Man, he ain't gonna climb that tree. He might climb it up to that big fork yonder and stand up there and hit. And what he could reach off with a 10 or 15, 20-foot pole, that's all about as long as you could find him, you know, that you could handle up a tree that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just far as he'd go. Well, I'd go on up yonder to them other forks, way up there.
Mm-hmm.
And when they'd get the lower ones off, all they'd get, why then, the others left, or just let them fall, and the hogs would go in the grove occasionally, break in,
mm-hmm.
and they'd clean them up when they'd get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd take them canvas and get out there under them trees, and I'd get up there on them with a pole, and I'd frame them out of there.
Yeah.
I'd get them all over there.
Yeah.
I could climb like a squirrel in almost.
Now, who was that fellow?
Henry Berline. He's dead.
And that's up towards Camptown.
Out here by Campville. The Seaboard Railroads, you know, that was. And his groves were back this way, a mile or two west of the grove out in the woods.
Was that out past towards Newberry?
No, that's over on the east side. Newberry's on the west side.
Oh, I'm turned around, yeah.
Yes, it's and that far up after I got through shipping them or up in the summer. He wrote me back that I had done shipped him over 21,000 pounds.
Is that right?
Now, that's some pecans, I'm telling you.
That's pecans, isn't it?
Yes, sir. We had two buildings. Well, we had one building a whole lot longer than that one there. It was longer than that there one, this way. And we had bins in it, you know. It was built for horse stalls.
Yeah.
And 11 head of horses and mules there most all the time. And we just moved the horse stall, built a new barn, and put a hayloft in it and all and grain bin, and used that for the horse and mules in. And we took the old one for a dry shed to help dry these pecans. Well, then we had a regular house. It was about 40 feet long. And it had four rows of bins in it, about 4 by 6 bins. And there was 6 inches deep, you know, and had it bottomed with this hardware cloth,
yeah.
So that the pecans couldn't fall through and the air could come in on it.
Oh, yeah.
And every few days right after you gather, you have to go in and stir them things up with your hands that way.
Oh.
To dry them.
Yeah.
And then you bag them up and bag just like mail pouches.
Uh-huh.
And it locked just like the mail pouch did. And
uh-huh. I never seen that.
You fill them up, put 100 pounds in each bag, and sew it up, sew that top up with a little rope, and then would lock it, push it through that long lock. It was about that long. You put the end of that rope in there, push it through, pull it up there, and when you pull it up there, it locked.
Yeah.
And
that'd be handy to have.
It was handy. And then he had ways to open them when he got them up there to Illinois, you see.
Yeah.
He could open them and sell them right out.
Yeah.
And he sold every one of them.
Yes, sir.
And he valued them in shipping them by express, you see. That's where he had them shipped, by express every time.
Mm.
And he valued them 75 cents a pound. Not hauled out. They're just in the hull.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was amusing.
Long, when was that now?
Oh, that long, 23 and 24.
Yeah.
He was down here in 24 and bought a brand new 24 Model T Ford.
Yeah.
When he was down here, from the have out there on the place.
Oh.
I had bought an old secondhand 1918 Model T that I was using and made me a little truck of it, you know?
Yeah.
On account of carrying stuff around over the groves and about different places, fertilizer and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, every winter, we'd whitewash them trees just as high as we could reach with a big brush and a long handle pole, you know, and just whale oil, soap, and lime. Mixed together. Well, he said that'd kill the insect that was under that bark. He said, well, they'll bed under that bark, going behind that bark, you see, to stay warm.
Yeah.
Well, we whitewash that tree up there with that stuff as high as we could reach, and that would kill that run down, you see, goes in behind them pieces of bark sticking out, and it'd kill the insect out. He wasn't bothered with insects so much. Eh?
Yeah.
Well, then in the spring, when they begin to bud out and start growing, we had to take a wagon and had a barrel pump on it, you know, and you could put that, fill the barrel up with that stuff and pump it up there. Had long pieces of hose and pipe together.
Yeah.
And we could throw it to the top of them trees, that spray. And I'd get them insects that was coming out with the budded tree, you see.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd put on pecans.
Uh-huh. I didn't quite picture how would you sew that up there?
Well, in a pump with a pump, barrel pump, they call them to it, you see. You just stick the pipe down in this barrel of spray stuff and pump it. That stuff would shoot out yonder.
What would you pump with?
Your hands.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. We didn't have no little engines out there. We can just use our hands to pump it.
And you mean it'd sew it on up towards the top of the pecan tree?
Yeah, sew it to the top. Just put that barrel up in that wagon, take 2 mules or 2 horses and drive them down between the trees, you know, on the road, and pump that stuff on. Trees were 20 feet apart.
Yeah.
You
know what, Mr. Wilkes Silcox? It's got so a man don't not satisfied with some simple rig. Just not satisfied with something simple.
You throw away hundreds of dollars, you're figuring to make more dollars and lose it right there. A lot of times he'll come out in the loss.
Yeah. Half the equipment he buys, he don't know about it till he gets it.
No. Well, he don't know how to use it after he gets it. And the time he's spent there, one thing and another, and the money it's cost him to get that equipment and get it fitted up and everything, he's lost money.
He lost money. I was thinking about when the first thing you told me about that little sawmill that you could carry around like that.
That's right.
And the man set it up.
He hope I set it up.
And it got it to running.
Yep.
And you could see what it do.
Sure.
I see you didn't take a chance on that.
No, I didn't take no chance at all.
It wasn't speculating.
The university didn't. You see, put it up for them. It was out there on that forest. I didn't have nothing to do with it. We're just working there.
Yeah.
And they could see what they're buying.
That's right. They used it for, I guess, near a year before they bought it.
Yeah.
I think he gave them a year's trial on it.
Yeah.
Guaranteed it for that long.
Yeah.
Well, you know it's got to be good machinery to stand that.
Oh, yes. Yes. And it's got to do what he says it'll do.
It'll do it, too.
Yeah.
It'll do just what he said it would do.
Oh, man.
But nowadays, people got to where they don't use no old-time shingles and stuff like that like they used to much. They do some out in the country, but around the towns where they're doing building, they don't use that.
Yeah.
They use this other materials,
yeah,
like topping and one thing and another.
Yeah.
Now, this is Channel 1 over around 425. Around 425, Channel 1 over. And... this is rich. This is rich. I didn't realize when I was talking to him just how much of that challenge, as I call it, taunting, is in his experiences. Why, even in that reciting how he sprayed those trees with that little barrel pump, he calls it. It's just marvelous. Spray clear the top with it. Just throw it up there. And then I told him about my little pump I put on the power takeoff of the tractor that I don't use much anymore for spraying the animals. But it won't spray high. And then in general, buying equipment that we don't know about and can't use. That little barrel pipe was just ideal.
Yeah.
90 feet
high. And they drove tile piping. I guess they said it was steel piping. I don't know, but one right against the other that way. The full length of that building and width and all the way around it, then built to that. That them pipes driven in the ground that way. Well, that 90-foot crane just would set it up there.
Yeah.
It was so tall, the pieces of steel piping.
Huh.
And it was about 10 inches, looked like his irons or more.
Yeah.
Maybe 12.
Yeah. Yes, sir. That's right nice.
Right
nice. Where from? Where were you brought up?
Over here in Clay County.
Yeah.
About 12 miles south of Green Cove Springs.
Yeah.
And we moved from there in 98 up here to Melrose.
Yeah.
You know where that is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we moved to Melrose, right out this side of Melrose. P.H. Westgard was running the sawmill there, and my dad, he took the job of driving his team, hauling his logs to his mill.
Uh-huh. You learned the business working with your daddy.
Yeah.
I see.
Sure.
How many boys was you?
Four.
Four boys.
There's three of them dead.
Yeah.
Now I'm the only one alive.
Yeah. And that was 98, and your daddy moved over here after Melrose from
over there,
Green Cove.
No, we were out south of Green Cove, about 12 miles. Isn't that close to what they call Boston?
Uh-huh.
Just 5 miles from where we lived, out in the country of Boston.
Uh-huh.
I was just telling somebody the other day, if I just had a meal, or was able to get one like that when we had that at the university and a little caterpillar to pull it,
yeah,
and had a body of timber like that and we left, sold out down there for a little and nothing.
Yeah.
Well, in 98, I wouldn't dread nothing. I wouldn't worry.
You wouldn't have to. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have to.
No, sir. Because it was long, tall, yellow pine.
Yeah.
Just about a half inch sap was all the sap that was on the tree.
Yeah.
When you cut a half inch deep in there, you were into the heart of that tree.
Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of it on there.
Yeah. Now,
it won't hardly last you 3 years if you don't treat it every year mighty good.
You can't put it outside. You got to keep it undercover.
Undercover, right.
Yeah.
You cover it for a year and let it get uncovered for 3 weeks and it's gone.
It's gone. You used to throw that spray up from the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of how did that work, Mr.?
Well, just like one of these deep well force pumps. You know how it'll pump the water up that way? You know, there's some that could use with windmills, if you ever saw one of those windmills. The university did have one on the west side of the railroad, Seaboard Railroad down here.
Yeah.
On that side, they used to have a windmill out there, pump water for the stock. See, they raised cattle and hogs out there. On that, I helped clear up all that land along in there. It was swampy in the land.
Yeah.
Back here in about 33 or 34.
Yeah. Well, now, A force pump.
Mm-hmm. Just get you a force pump. See, it's a double action, you might say. You only would work your lever the one way, but the pressure of it will send it right on.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. You can send water right on with it. It's just sort of like hooking on to the end of one of these spigots here at the city hall, at the city, it's, you know.
Yeah.
That water will force out you on 20 feet nearly.
Yeah. Yeah.
After it comes out the nozzle, your hose, it'll go nearly 20 feet.
That's right.
Now, a plane's coming over, and he says a sinkhole out there where he lived or worked, and he carries on now with his pumping.
Pulling one thing and another in there, and grass. So the water would get up pretty high in it. He decided that he was going to take, get him a little engine, a little gasoline engine, which he did, about a 2 1/4 horse or something, 3. And he picked up some parts or got them from somebody of one of these little centrifugal pumps, you know, hooking on that power and hit it spin. And so he decided then he got about 250 or 200 foot lots from his house going on east, and he goes to work and fixes up that little old pump, and there was a ditch that come out across his place up there by the house, and he decided he wanted to water this back end, this east end of it up there. So he got him some of this black hose, you know, tubing hose, and he goes out there and gets that little old thing fixed up and got it to working. So now he can go out there and throw that belt. Well, he generally keeps the belt on here. We've got him some tin he covers it up kind of out of weather. Keeps the belt from rotting. But he can go there and crank that engine up and he can shoot that water out on across that piece of ground and get it wet in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, just throw the hose down and let it pump, and it'll run the water out on down through the ground.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
That is nice.
Just so high.
You got to, you can, the only way you can get it to go any further is to reduce it from your pipe on out a piece. That'll give you more pressure on it.
Well, I hadn't thought of that.
Well, it will.
Well, now let me tell you.
Well, put a hose on there and then run down out there and put your nozzle on the end of your hose to do your spraying if you want to spray something off out there. Pressure cutting down from say from a 3/4 to a 1/2 inch will make a lot of difference in it.
Yeah.
And cutting it down that say 15-20 foot, you have a whole lot more pressure than what you have on that big stream.
Well,
you see, by that spraying that tree, and we could go through there any time of the year and spray them if we want to. If we see something like that starting, we can go in and spray that tree.
Yeah.
You get them right up there with that wheel oil soap and stuff.
Yeah.
It'll kill him dead.
Yeah. Well, now that's what I need. That sure is just what you had back in 19.
That's right. I had to get them.
Nice.
Well, they've got so smart now, these scientists, you see, they've developed new stuff that can work. Maybe you couldn't get that wheel or soap. I don't know. I ain't tried to buy none of it, and I ain't heard of anybody buying any since I left over there about 27.
Well, I think that's the idea.
Well, another thing, that's what I had reference to a while ago. These scientists has got so smart, you know, they're inventing so many new things because I think the reason of it is back to use our old equipment, so too many knows how to handle it, you see, and take now they don't. They got to think they got to have a college education to know anything.
Yes, sir. That's loose.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you, I'm in favor of this high graduating schools no more than nothing, because if a person gets knowledge enough, to go ahead and do what he's supposed to do and to work like he's supposed to work, why, you get knowledge enough to go on. I have.
They seem to figure like a man don't learn unless he's in school.
That's what. Know nothing about that. Time they get out the door, they forgot it all.
Yes, sir. They're not interested in it.
Ain't interested in a bit. Well, I got a granddaughter. She finished college last year. That is a high school college out there. And now she's working out here at the university in one of them offices, typist.
Yes.
For them. But now I can beat her figuring all the pieces.
Yes.
I can figure you about figuring with my head what she figured. I have to take a pencil to.
Yes.
That's a fact.
Yes.
He was just an old country farmer, you know, and he'd piddle about and get people, get jobs of telephone poles or something by the way to be gotten, logs or piling, ties or something. And he'd give the rest of us a job working at it, you see.
Uh-huh.
Well, later years come on, he got in that sawmill I was telling you about back up here next to Rochelle, at what they called Pfeiffer at that time. Had a big double-deck mill there. That's when I was getting them logs for him at River Sticks. And somehow or another, him and this man I was working with over there at Grove Park, I used to plow for him for $1 a day. And glad to get it.
Yes.
And so Pfeiffer, he figured to sell out to Pfeiffer. His part of the turpentine business. He had turpentine and sawmill and all going there. And he was going to sell Pfeiffer his part of the turpentine business. Well, they figured and figured and figured on it. He went to different people to get them to figure on it. And Pfeiffer, Waite figured that Pfeiffer was trying to beat him out as soon as he wanted to. So he showed me the figures that one day. He says, "Now, you're pretty good on figuring, and I know it." He says, "I want you to figure this and see what you get out of it." I told him I'd do what I could. I said, "I figured the thing out for him and showed it to him." He said, "Well, you just saved me $7,000. I forgot how much it was now. Well, of course, it would run into thousands of dollars. Half of a turpentine firm, the steel, the horses, the mules. See, they had to have horses to ride the wood. They had to have the mules to draw the turpentine into the steel. Everything, I don't remember just how many $1,000 it was, though."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You just saved me that much right there." Mm-hmm. And
this fella, Pfeiffer, was his name?
Pfeiffer.
He
was a millionaire.
Oh, he was?
Yes, sir. And Gus and Lang used to run a bank right over there on the corner of that box right east of the courthouse square there. Right on this corner where them buildings was tore out there.
Yeah.
And they sold out to the Florida National.
Yeah.
And they were there on 2nd Street now.
Uh-huh.
See, Will died. That left Gus and Lang, his two brothers, steering the bank.
Oh.
And so then Lang, he died. And Gus, he was the last one of them that died, but they all three died and left the bank and the money and everything there.
Yeah.
See, they couldn't keep with them.
Couldn't keep with them.
That's one thing where people, if they don't work for the Lord, they can lose it.
Yes, sir.
If you got the Lord on your side, you're going to come out ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that looks unreasonable, you might say, in a way, but it's a fact. It's like I tell a lot of them about being sick. A lot of times a person will get sick. Well, they'll go to the doctor first thing with it, you see. Something they could take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And maybe lose a hand or something. Now, there's two men that belongs to the Baptist Church over here in South Gainesville. One's named James Riley, and the other one is Kemp, K-E-M-P. He's a big, stout fella. Well, he's had to take off part of his hand already and kept putting it on. Well, Riley's hand and arm, it just commenced dwindling down. Went to the Lake City Hospital and all up there and stayed there for the longest. They wanted to send him to Alabama or Kentucky, some other state over there, and operate on his hand. I said, James, I said, you ain't doing a thing but going to the wrong doctor. He says, why? He says, I'm going to Lake City where they're supposed to have some of the best doctors here in the country. I said, well, I don't care what town you're going to. I said, you're just going to the wrong doctor.
Yeah.
I said, go to God for your help, and he'll
yeah.
give it to you, because I says, he made you and he can kill you.
Yeah.
That's a simple fact,
yeah.
and it's reasonable, too.
Yeah.
You can't get that kind of help from every doctor here in this town. All these doctors are working for the money.
That's their thinking, I know.
I know, too. Now, what do you reckon it costs to have these cataracts took off my eyes?
Oh, $300-$500.
Cost over $600.
Yeah.
To get them cataracts took off.
Yeah.
And it didn't take him 5 minutes to take them off.
Yeah.
Now, they got this modern machinery, you see, that they didn't used to have.
Yeah.
Now, he's got some kind of little instrument he can put in your eye, and you won't feel it.
Yeah.
And he cut that cataract right out.
Yeah.
Little half moon thing, they call it, see, and it just makes a circle of your eye.
Yeah.
And he'll cut that cataract clear out, and he takes it out.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to have it, isn't it?
It is. Yes, sir. I don't believe that I was in there 5 minutes. He took one off one week, and the next week took the other one off.
Yeah.
He said he'd do that, but that'd leave me one to kind of peep out at
yeah.
with while I was, the other one was recuperating, and then get that one, and this other one would be picked up enough to go away at kind of.
Yeah.
Well, I got along fair with them, and they yeah. never have pained me none.
Uh-huh.
Never have.
Yeah. How long has that been?
Well, 2 years ago, this yeah. past October,
yeah.
and November, the first one took off the 24th of October, and then a week later, the other one took off. That was the first of November, you see.
You know, that is an interesting experience you had out there that you was telling about, and that Frank told me about. That's interesting. Mr. Pfeiffer was already taking that. What were you doing out there at the time, Mr.? How'd you happen to be out there at the time?
Well, I was cutting them telephone poles. He was taking orders. Oh, I think had the telephone business here in town then.
Yeah.
Charlie Lloyd and his daddy.
Yeah.
And so Pfeiffer would get the orders, how many poles they wanted, and he'd give us the orders. Then we'd get them, put them on, load them on the flat car, and they ship them into Gainesville here.
Oh, yeah. So you were already set up out there?
Already. Well, there was no set up to it. We could move out what we had in 2 hours' time.
Yeah.
Just load it on a wagon and take off.
Yeah, it didn't take much equipment to handle a telephone pole.
Mm.
Yeah.
Axe, a saw, and a peeling iron, one of these old turpentine scrapes. Scrape the face of the turpentine trees to get that white gum that takes up on the front of the tree off.
Yeah.
Scrape that off. They scrape them every winter anyhow.
Yeah.
But we take that iron and sharpen it, and you just peel a pole right on with it. Pine or cypress.
Uh-huh. And you do that by hand?
Do that by hand.
Yeah. Well, now, how come him to get into business himself?
I don't know. It bad. He was in when we moved into up there to Grove Park. Where he
well, now, I mean, how come him to get into that, moving that timber out there by himself and not having you do it?
That was Pfeiffer. He was in with Pfeiffer, though, before that, you see.
Well, now, this wasn't Pfeiffer you were talking about?
No, it was Waits.
Oh, Waits?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this was Waits.
Waits and Pfeiffer was in together, you see.
Uh-huh.
There's all partnership on some calls.
I don't know why.
But anyhow, Waits got out of it and just left Pfeiffer with the remainder of it, you
uh-huh.
see.
Uh-huh.
I think Pfeiffer thought he could make it all. It's
no use dividing
itself.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He told me before that time that he'd get around you just a friendly talking guy you ever met. And, he got talking and telling me things that way, and he said he went to New York, and he got on that rich street over there. I forgot the name of it now.
Yeah.
And
Wall Street.
Wall Street. He went, got on Wall Street. He said to put him off of there right now. Wouldn't let him walk it. If you wasn't worth $1 million, you couldn't walk it. They wouldn't let you. And he, so I, out here while I was getting that timber out for him, he come to me out there one day. He said, well, he said, I'm going to New York now. He says, I can walk Wall Street, just slapping his hands out of the way. He says, I'm worth $1 million.
Mister?
But he hated to pay you a dime just as bad as you'd hate to pay $10 to somebody.
Yeah.
That was a grafty old man.
Yeah.
He didn't look so old. I don't know just how old he was. Don't remember what the paper stated his age was when he died.
Which one was that?
Will.
That Will.
Then Gus and Lang, they died later, but I don't remember their ages.
Now, was Will the oldest?
I think he was.
Yeah. So he figured he could just do it all by himself.
Yeah. And didn't know nothing about it. All he knew was the books. It's like this man I worked for in Illinois in the pecan grove. This German that he had had on the place for 3 years,
yeah.
He claimed to know it all, you see, but he didn't. He got his little bit out of books.
Yeah.
I got mine by real experience, what I've got.
Yeah.
I didn't get it out of books.
Yeah.
I can tell anybody that.
Yeah.
He said, well, he says, now I'll tell you. He says, there's a piece of ground right out there. It wasn't far from the house. And the roads, I forgot now, but that's been quite a few years back. It was 100 and some feet long, the roads in there, and there was just room for 34 rows, and it was 4 foot apart, the roads was. He says, if you grow me something on that piece of ground this year, he says, I'll buy you a nice suit of clothes Christmas. I said, you will? He said, yes. I said, well, go to work. Just kidding him, you know. He'd laugh and joke just as big as anybody.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of muck. We'd go out in these cypress ponds, which there's several of them on this place, in the summer when work was dull in the fields and all, we'd go out there and dig that muck out in them ponds, haul it up and put it in some cow lots. Then we'd haul straw or something like that, leaves and stuff, and cover that muck. And we'd throw some lime and potash and cane up salt over it. That salt would help moisture, you see, make it rot.
Oh.
And then we throw another layer of muck over that. Sometimes we have them lots that deep in it in the fall, spring of the year when they start hauled out.
Yeah.
Haul around and just shovel it out all over the grove around under them trees. Out far as the limbs of the trees spread.
Yeah.
Well, then after we got that done, we'd go out there with about 25 pounds for a tree as big as that yarn or bigger. And throw about 25 pounds of commercial around it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, when I've gathered over 100 pounds off of lots of them trees.
Uh-huh.
Not no big trees either.
Yeah.
But they just really put them on.
Yeah.
And so we'd just do that, break it up then, and then we just drag these Zach Mahars over to keep the grass and weeds down.
Yeah.
Keep it clean.
Yeah.
We had it clean at the end of the year.
Uh-huh. With a couple of mules.
Mm-hmm.
Now you had the muck.
Oh yeah.
And then in the little cypress ponds.
Mm-hmm.
And when the work was light, you'd just pull that out. Now where was it? In the cow lots?
Yeah, we had cows penned, you know,
yeah.
Cow lots.
Yeah.
Around the barn there, and
yeah.
You just put it in there, let them stomp it going in and out.
Oh.
Them feet will cut up that strong stuff in that muck, too.
Well, what do you know?
Not too deep.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. You can take a small bunch of cows and create a lot of fertilizer if you want to.
Yeah. And then you put some salt and...
cane of salt and potash and that nitrate. No. There was three kinds of it. Phosphate acid and cane of salt and... ammonia, I think it was. I don't remember for sure just what it was now.
Mm-hmm. And then you'd put some more on top, another layer of muck on that.
Oh, yeah. Throw a layer of muck on that, and
yeah.
Throw some more leaves and straw over that.
Yeah.
If it was out in the woods, we'd go out in the woods and rake it up, rake that pine straw up, you know, and put it in the wagon and haul it in.
And you done that for the pecans?
Sure. Well, now, I don't think it was a start telling you about the corn, though. I take you, I laid off that piece of ground in them 4-foot rows. I took the wagons and hauled this muck, some of this muck, and just string it down in there, in them furrows that where I opened it with, you see. So I put that potash and stuff in on top of that then and covered it up.
Yeah.
Let it lay there for 4 weeks before I planted corn. And
yeah.
I mean to tell you, we fed them 12 head of horses and mules for over 2 weeks out of that little piece of ground. And then when he was there, when they hauled it in, when we broke it and hauled it into the barn,
yeah.
And checked it out at the barn, and we hauled in 34 barrels of corn. Off of them 34 rows.
Is that right? Well, now there you are. Where was you living then?
I was living on his place.
On his place?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, big place. He had over 300 acres of grove there. And he'd sold a man up there in Illinois a 40-acre lot on the south end of it, off of it, before then.
And he had 300 acres of grove?
Of grove.
God,
man. It kept you going.
Oh, yes.
And when you start together, that's when it worked me harder. Because I had to every variety of them pecans was kept separate.
Oh.
Places here, this kind was putting another kind in, another one there, another one there. There's 14 different varieties on there.
Lord help us, I don't see how anybody can keep all that many straight.
You got to know them and you got to watch it. You know, it's easy enough. For instance, you go through the grove and pick up a few out anywhere. You go in the bin in that nut house, you throw it in any bin
yeah,
or most. You wouldn't
right.
think it was to
that's
keep
right.
them separate.
No.
Well, then I got to come along and pick out every one of them that you throwed in there and put them in its place.
Lord,
that old man know the pecan when he saw it.
Yes. Yes.
He sure did.
Yes. Well, now, he didn't learn that out of books, did he, Miss?
No, I don't reckon he did, because he was a German, you know. I don't know what they learned there.
He had to learn that from working in them, looks
that's
to me like.
I think. Or studying them personally anyhow, somewhere in there.
Somewhere
or
other. A fella, if you was good at it, that'd take you right a good while.
I know
to too. Get used to that.
Yeah, and boy, you got a crowd of hands are working in there. Well, you don't know who sold them in there, but you just know they're in there.
Yeah.
Well, after you get accustomed to it yourself and the shape and all of them, you notice it when you walk by it.
Yeah.
But sometimes they get in there and I didn't know it, you know, go through there for something to get some more sacks or something to put more in out of the grove.
Yeah.
Throw a handful in a bin and go on. It was hard work and a lot of it, but then I enjoyed it.
Now some children are coming along that little dirt road from school with wreaths and things that they made at school.
Now that the New Year's Day's over.
That's right.
Out for 2 weeks now.
Out for 2 weeks. Are they looking forward to that, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Of course, now when I was going to school, we didn't have nothing like that.
You never did?
Mm-mm. Never saw nothing like that. And I never got but to the 8th grade before I had to stop and go to Cordwood.
Now, this is the end of Channel 1 over. The end of Channel 1 over with Mr. Silcox. And we are still sitting close to that little parking lot in the car. And the children have just come by from school with the Christmas wreaths. And that gets him started on his own school days. And here is this fine story about the cord wood, that he corded the wood when he was growing up.